clarify that Mr. Stoneberger wants to, and both of these lawyers are for the appellees, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
And Mr. Stoneberger wants to use 10 minutes, and Mr. Vinding wants to use 5?
Yes, Your Honor, and I know this is somewhat unconventional. We don't want to make it overcomplicated.
We can follow it. Okay. We can follow it. But okay. Maybe you can just tell me what you're trying to accomplish here, and then we can...
Sure. With regard to some of the underlying factual findings of the trial court that relied on certain declarations, with regard to the click-through of the defendant's systems, Mr. Vinding submitted a declaration as personal knowledge of that.
Well, don't start arguing the case. What issues are the two of you? So how are you dividing this up? Since you're the appellee, you don't have rebuttal time, right?
Correct.
So when you come up here, if you tell me what issues each of you is going to cover, then if the first person gets up, we won't ask him about that issue. We'll wait till the second one. But so are you dividing it by issues, or what are you doing here?
Only to the extent that the court had specific questions about the facts of the specific click-through argument, Mr. Vinding would address that. But that might not even be necessary, depending on what the original argument is.
All right, so you're just dividing 10 and 5?
Yes.
Okay. So, and is Mr. Stoneberger going first?
Yes.
That's
Stoneberger, yes.
Okay.
That's me. Thank you.
So, we'll put 10 on the clock and then the second one. When your time's up, unless we're asking you questions, sit down so you don't cut into the other person's time. But I will tell you, Mr. Vinding, since you're going second, if we're asking him questions, I won't take up your 5 minutes by our questions, okay? So you'll get 5 minutes.
Thank you very much.
All right, and then if I have to adjust on rebuttal, then I'll deal with it that way. So on the appellants, there's two of you sitting here, but my understanding is one person is going to handle the argument. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. I'll handle the argument for all the appellants.
Okay. Thank you. So now that I understand all of this, then why don't you state your name and appearance for the record, and each side has 15 minutes total.
Yes, Your Honor. Jeff Fisher from Kilpatrick Townsend. I represent defendant appellant Otter Knight Motor Club, but I'm speaking on behalf of all appellants with respect to the denial of the motion to stay pending arbitration. I would ask, I'm going to try and keep 4 minutes for rebuttal time if possible. So that's the goal.
Okay. You know it's aspirational, but we'll see what we can do.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So this appeal is about contractual assent in a modern economy. Plaintiffs Dean Webb and Edgar Garcia brought TCPA claims against the defendants, alleging that they received illegal telemarketing calls attempting to sell vehicle protection contracts. Plaintiffs alleged that they bought those contracts, that they made a down payment over the phone, and that they made monthly payments on those contracts. Defendants seek to enforce the arbitration agreement and class action waiver in the contract that defendants bought, that plaintiffs bought. In an order that only contained 2 sentences of reasoning and no explicit factual findings, the district court found defendants had not shown that plaintiffs contractually assented to the arbitration provision. But the district court's reasoning was wrong, and it was not even defended by the appellees. So
well,
first,
there are cases on clip wrap. So a question that I have is, if we were to hold that the ultimate smart club agreement is valid clip wrap agreement, do we need to remand to the district court for further findings about the contradictory evidence, or is it your position that the sworn declarations from your clients are enough to carry the burden?
So, Your Honor, this case is about both click wrapped and accept a return. If
right.
if the court finds that the evidence is sufficient to carry our burden on click wrap, then I think there could be a reversal and you don't have to send it back. If the court finds there's a factual issue on click wrap and on accept a return, in that case, I think vacatur and remand would be appropriate.
How can we send it back if the trial court never made a finding of fact?
Well, I think
dissent. That was never done.
Correct, Your Honor. The trial court did not make an explicit factual finding on assent. I assume it was an implicit factual finding, and I think you could remand to direct discovery, to direct further factual findings.
There was a question as to whether the you had to click to accept before you got the agreement, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
That was never resolved. Is that correct?
The district court did not have an explicit ruling on that. And
well, how could there be assent or lack of consent without a ruling on that?
Well, I think there needs to be a ruling either way. I think that's right, Your Honor. And I think our position would be that there's declaratory evidence sufficient to submit our burden. But in addition to that, we would also submit that the district court's two lines of reasoning are wrong. The district court held the parties agree that plaintiffs did not see this document until after they paid over the phone. And post-purchase contracts, whether accepted by signature, electronic assent, or failure to return, are a common feature of modern commerce. They've been approved by California courts and by the United States Supreme Court. Think about buying a ticket, like on a cruise ship, and not getting the terms and conditions until you physically receive that ticket.
Well, second, in this case, the evidence does show that they checked the box, and it does seem to be that that they received things subsequently. I think the judge here seemed to think that type of situation wasn't allowed. So if the judge is wrong on that, but there are still declarations in the record that the appellees, they filed declarations saying they didn't click, okay? So let's assume that we say the judge was wrong, clip wrap can happen. But I think, as my colleague Judge Antone is saying, the judge never wrestled with whether they actually clicked or if they can come up with some explanation that they're going to say that they didn't click, and so the judge is going to have to resolve that. And it's a court trial, right? I mean, we're not talking a jury on this. We're talking that a court trial on whether the click that is in the record was actually a click they made under the proper law of clip wrap.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that's right, that there should be a factual finding there. I think if this court finds that the evidence is sufficient to sustain our burden, I don't know that, you could have a remand with direction to grant. But I also think here that the undisputed facts on the legal issues show that this was also an accept or return agreement. So
you're confusing me. You say we could remand telling the court what to do. What findings of fact to make? We can't do that. We could remand saying that the standard applied was incorrect and direct the trial court then to apply the correct standard. In other words, advising that his notion of the fact that they paid first rendered this arbitration ineffective. There was no assent, in other words, but that's all we could do, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, although I also think that there could be a finding of fact. If that's wrong, then I agree that vacatur and remand would be appropriate. But there's also, I think, below, the other error was that defendants did carry their burden by a preponderance of the evidence to show that there was contractual assent. First, through click wrap, as this court discussed, and second, through an accept or return agreement. And
well, what is your best Ninth Circuit authority for the view that an accept or return theory of assent is valid? The cases that you cite in your brief largely predate Norcia versus Samsung, which seems to expressly reject mutual assent based on inaction.
So Our position is not mutual assent based on an action. I think Chow versus Prepaid Legal Service is a California Court of Appeals case that postdates Knutson. It may predate Norcia, but those cases have similar reasoning. We think Knutson and Norcia are clearly distinguishable. The California and outside circuit precedents, courts have consistently found that where a plaintiff purchases a contract, failure to exercise the right to cancel that contract constitutes assent. Knutson is the plaintiff bought a car from Toyota. Involved, when you got the stack of papers that you get when you buy a car, one of the huge stack of papers was a 100-page warranty from SiriusXM related to a free trial. What the court buried in that 100-page warranty was an arbitration agreement. What the court found there was that a reasonable person in Knutson's position would not be expected to know that he would have any contractual relationship with SiriusXM, let alone that there would be an arbitration agreement that would apply to, in that case, a TCPA claim. And there's no assent, of course, when the plaintiff doesn't know about the contract. I think Wright versus SiriusXM, which is a central district case that postdated Knutson and Norcia and distinguished it, shows you the difference. There, they enforced a SiriusXM contract. The plaintiff bought the contract subscription directly from Sirius over the phone. When he bought the subscription, Sirius said, you're going to get the written terms in 14 days. You're going to have the right to opt out. Then he continued to pay. So unlike in Knutson and Norcia, where it's a free trial, there's no payments being made to Sirius or to Samsung, there's this ongoing performance of the relationship. So here, plaintiffs purchased a vehicle service contract, literally a contract. Any reasonable person would understand that that contract would be memorialized in a written document that included terms and conditions. And we don't have to guess about what a reasonable person would know, because the evidence shows, and this is the declaration of Vajira Samaratne, defendant's director of operations, that they were told on the phone that they would receive the contract within 14 days. And the documents that claimants, appellees produced two documents that they say they received when they clicked on the link, one by Mr. Vinding and the other by Mr. Webb. Both of those documents also say that you're going to receive the agreement in the mail within 14 days. They received the agreement in the mail. We produced mail delivery reports showing that both of these defendants, both of these plaintiffs, received the agreement in the mail. And they, after they received the agreement in the mail, which had this broad arbitration clause, it had a right to opt out of the arbitration clause or cancel for a full refund, no penalty, full refund. And this is on the front page of the agreement. You can see it on the cover page at 115 in the record that Mr. Webb produced. Even the cover page talks about arbitration, talks about the right to opt out. Not only did they not opt out, they continued paying their subscription fees. Mr. Webb paid two more after he received the contract. Mr. Garcia paid four more after he...
Well, they had given bank information or credit card information, so they were automatic debits, correct?
Yeah.
Which might be a distinguishing factor between you actually wrote out a payment or called in and make a payment.
You're
honest. So that's an inaction argument, I think.
Thank you for that question. I think... I'm not sure it's in the record whether there was automatic credit card payments. I don't doubt
well,
that.
I don't think there was. I'm probably making it up.
But I do also think that people have an obligation to review their credit card statements, to review their bank statements, to understand what they're paying. So the idea that because it's an automatic debit, it's not real performance. You don't know that money's coming out of your account. You're talking about Mr. Garcia had four credit card statements with these charges on it. Mr. Webb had two. They knew that they were continuing to perform. And this is important. During that time when they're paying their premium, they could have made a claim on their car. They had coverage up to, you know, 75%, $7,500. They didn't make a claim, but they could have. And as a result, they received the benefit of the contract. And they're bound by the obligation.
Let me see if my colleagues have any questions, because I know you want to reserve some time for rebuttal.
I do have a question. So this argument on assent, I don't see it anywhere in the district court's order. I don't see any analysis or discussion of whether there was assent by acceptance. And so I'm wondering what we're supposed to do with that. It seems you're asking us to weigh this evidence in the first instance and make a determination.
And when you say, thank you for that question, when you say assent by acceptance, do you mean the clicker app or accept
the
return?
No, not the clicker app. The second argument you were just making about the contract came to them, it had these terms, they made the payments, et cetera. There's nothing in the district court order about that.
So the district court order is a little bare on analysis. I think when the court says the parties agree that plaintiffs did not see this document until after they paid over the phone for purported extended warranties, I read that as a rejection of, I think, the whole concept of any accept or return contract. And I think in plaintiff's briefing, they made that same argument, that sentence indicates that the court considered that argument.
All right, I'll give you 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. May it please the court. Gene Stonebarger for plaintiffs and appellees, along with my colleague Michael Vinding.
Good morning.
The district court got it right in this circumstance. The court viewed the evidence that was presented to it, found that the defendants had not carried their burden to establish that a valid arbitration agreement existed.
It seems so. I don't know if we were to... I've got a question on whether the district court correctly applied the click wrap law. So if we were to find that the agreement is a click wrap agreement, what's your best authority to distinguish this case from Norcia and or our later cases finding those type of agreements to be enforceable? Because
sure.
I think the briefing was pre-Norcia, right?
The briefing in this case was post-Norcia.
Post, okay.
Your Honor, Knutson is on point here, I believe. That what's happened here is that the defendants have attempted to sell their consumers a certain product. You heard appellant's counsel say that what they were sold was a vehicle service contract, right? Well, these were marketed as extended warranties. After the money's collected on the phone for this extended warranty bumper to bumper, they're sent a link. Okay, both of our plaintiffs were sent a link.
Yeah, I think we know the factual part, but the question is, there is some law out there to support that these type of agreements can be okay, and the district court didn't seem to agree with that.
Well, because there was no agreement that was actually presented through the click-through links. And if you look at the record, and if you look at what was sent to the consumer through the link, and I'm just pointing to, it says, please use this link to download your confirmation, and it has a link, okay? It doesn't say about use this link to go through your agreement. When the link's clicked on with Mr. Webb, who actually clicked on it, Mr. Garcia never clicked on anything. He never received anything, never saw any arbitration agreement. Mr. Webb never saw an arbitration agreement, class action waiver, until weeks later when it came in the mail. But when he clicked on the link, what he saw was, and this is at the evidence of 112, it says extended service protection. It says congratulations and thank you for your purchase. You have made an excellent decision. Okay, it goes on to say your certificate of coverage and ID card should arrive within the next 10 to 14 business days. Okay, what came was an ID card, but also this piece of paper that says arbitration clauses, class action waiver, and it's right on the face, and on the top it says dealer loyalty protection, and it says your membership. It talks about this auto club membership. That's the arbitration clause that's sent with this auto club membership. Well, that's not what was purchased.
That isn't what the trial court was involved with. The trial court, as I understand it, said simply they paid for it first. And that was pretty much the analysis, wasn't it? I'm trying to figure out what this hearing was about. It was an Article III kind of proceeding, right? And you all consented to the judge being the trier of fact. It wasn't a summary judgment standard, right?
Your Honor, the defendants filed simply a motion to stay the case
right,
pending arbitration.
To stay.
Yeah, right. And the court ruled on the papers that was there.
But there was no analysis. How do we figure out what is there that shows an analysis of the clip wrap theory?
Sure. Well, I think that the court took the analysis of reviewing the declarations from that the defendants put in, saying that this, telling the court that this is what the defendant clicked through, and here's some confirmation page, not the actual content from the click throughs. That's what we put forward.
I'm talking about in the order. Where do you see that in the order?
Yeah. So the order at this was at 212 through 216. The court goes through the process, explains that this Ultimate Smart Club membership that's sent is sent only after this agreement's been made and after they've purchased not a membership but a vehicle service contract. And what the defendants put forth, their evidence that they put forth to show that an arbitration clause has been agreed to, they put forth a form that had a different seller name that was ultimately sent to Mr. Webb. Nothing was ever sent to Garcia. You know, different membership number, different expiration date, all these different terms, right? The seller was not even the same as listed on the page that the Finn is trying to set forth to say this is the arbitration clause.
I thought that was explained away as the differences in those forms being that one was for internal use and the other was for the customer, and that the agreements were exactly the same except for that first page. That's what the employee of the defendant said. And then in rebuttal, as I understood it, you really didn't dispute it.
No.
The content was the same after the first page, after the cover page.
The content on the terms behind.
Yeah.
Well, with regard to those provisions, yes, but it's not the same as what was purchased over the phone, because what was purchased over the phone was a bumper-to-bumper extended warranty, not this Motor Club membership. The document that was sent to the consumer indicates a Motor Club membership and that these the extended warranty is incidental to the membership, when that's not the case. What these
are you talking about the scope of the agreement then?
I'm talking about when the consumer gets this in the mail 2 weeks later, there's nothing that ties this to what they purchased on the phone, because what they believed that they were purchasing was an extended warranty, not a motor club.
We're kind of going round and round. All right. Judge Carney found that it wasn't a valid clip wrap agreement, correct?
Correct.
All right. Just go hypothetically with me on this. If we were to find that he was wrong on the law and that we find that it is an enforceable clip wrap agreement, do we then have to remand it for further findings, disputed facts?
Yeah, well, we have to find that Judge Carney made a clear error in his findings.
Well, if we find that he made a legal error, but he didn't do any factual, there's a factual dispute in terms of arguably that your people said they didn't click, they say they did, and we can't resolve that here.
Well, the court did resolve that. He weighed the declarations that the defense put forth that said they did click, the declarations that our plaintiffs put forth said they
did. Is that what he really did, or did he just get the law wrong on clip wrap agreements?
I don't think he got the law wrong at all, Your Honor. There was no arbitration provision presented to the consumers on this click-through process. The arbitration agreement was never seen by any consumer that clicks through. The defendants didn't put on any evidence to even show what the consumers presented through the online click-through. There was nothing there. The court found that there was an absence of evidence, correctly found that the defendant failed to carry their burden to put forward any evidence to show that there was a valid agreement. What came weeks later, or you know, a couple weeks later, to one of our plaintiffs which was never signed, never returned, no one ever signed it, was not what was reflected in the purchase that had occurred on the phone weeks before. So with regard to the click wrap argument, I believe the court did take into account everything that was put before the court, found that the records that the defendants had put forth were not credible, because our plaintiffs, and we had also alleged that they were populating these after the fact in order to justify claiming there was consent for the not, do not call list, for instance, right?
Well, I think what they're going to argue is that, citing Norcia, the district court refused defendants' theory of electronic assent because plaintiffs received the agreement after they made the payments by phone. So if this conclusion is wrong as a matter of law, if the panel were to conclude that, it seems that it would have to be remanded for factual findings because those were not done.
The agreement that came through to the consumer, Mr. Webb, did not reflect the agreement they reached over the phone. I think
that doesn't answer the judge's question. We're trying to figure out what finding of fact the judge made. And you tell me there are findings of fact, and I've got the order in front of me right now.
Okay.
And the only thing I see that could constitute any kind of analysis is in the very last paragraph in Section 4. And it does two things. It says that they paid for it before they got it, and that agreement, the appearance of the agreements were different. That's it. I want you to tell me if I'm wrong, because I may be missing something here, but that's all I see.
That Webb received it and that it was
different. My question is this the entire analysis in that paragraph?
No, I believe that what's important about the court's analysis, he says, under the circumstances,
Is there any other analysis? I know the court gives a long explanation of the law. But is this the analysis of his application of the law in this single paragraph?
As to the facts that were presented to him by the defendant, which were not sufficient, right? So the judge wasn't given sufficient facts by the defendant to support the finding that there was a valid arbitration.
He didn't say that. I mean, the order says what Judge Antone has just laid out for you. He made two points, and you're arguing the facts to us and saying we should reach a conclusion based on various facts, but the district judge didn't reach them and didn't do the analysis.
I must be missing it here, respectively, because
I need my glasses to see this, but it's ER 26, which is the portion of the judge's order where he provides a couple sentences of analysis, and does not say what you're saying to us.
He says the agreement defendants submit in seeking to compel arbitration looks markedly different than Mr. Webb's copy. And then he says, under the circumstances, giving plaintiffs the benefit of reasonable doubts and inferences, the defendants have not proven by preponderance of the evidence.
This first part you read, that the agreements were markedly different. Yeah. I don't even see you disputing that on appeal, that the two agreements were the same, the cover page was different. I didn't see you even defending the judge's conclusion there. So I'm not sure how that gets you to the point where we are to read more into this order.
What Mr. Webb received was not the same as far as what was populated. And what that went to also establish is that the forms that were populated and presented to the court were, according to our allegations, fabricated. And just because it says...
All right, so can we agree that we can all look at the district court's order and decide what factual determinations were made? You have one interpretation.
Right.
The other side may have a different interpretation, and that's what we need to look at?
I think unless you find there was clear error in the factual findings from the court, where he found
or
here
if there
they
were factual findings, we can look.
Sure, certainly. You can see if
all right.
You don't believe that there were
we've taken findings. You over on that. Unless my colleagues have additional questions, that'll conclude your part of the argument, and then your colleague will get 5 minutes.
Your Honor, so I'll just be brief.
Well, you got 5 minutes, so.
I'm still going to because you've indulged us, so I appreciate it.
No, that's okay. The 5 minutes are yours.
Thank you. What happens in this case is that when they click, they pay, they give their credit card or a debit card, they pay. And at that point, a consumer receives a link that they click on, and as the court found, they receive a policy confirmation, the extended service protection policy, certificate of coverage, important benefits of the policy, and transferability of the coverage. At some later point, another document that is supposed to be the hard copy of what they've clicked on is sent. That document is materially different in that it now includes for the first time the arbitration clause and the waiver of class action. And so in a sense, this is different than your typical click wrap cases, in because as the court in Lozano stated, that it is an economic and practical consideration when you're buying something and there is an agreement to come later. But in this case, the agreement, in the sense that people click after they paid for an extended warranty and they receive the documents, and then, I don't want to use the word sneakily, but another document arrives that materially changes. And those same economical and practical considerations.
This all goes to assent, and I don't see, and going back to the same issue, I don't see where there's any fact-finding on that.
I can't disagree with the point that there is no factual finding.
I'm not even sure what happened based on what I see here. I mean, you're saying one thing and they're saying another thing, but findings of fact.
On the issue of assent in terms of what was assented to? Yeah.
So you need the facts to apply the law.
And what makes this even more difficult is that yet a third contract is provided. That's the one provided to the court. And that has those material differences. And those material differences are profound in the sense that it's a different membership number. So if you're going to call in to make a claim, which number is it? It has a different effective date. When does it start? It has a different ending date. How do they know when it ends? These are all material differences that were not provided to the consumer at the time. Instead, it was what was provided to the consumer, as the court found, was the policy confirmation, extended services protection policy, and all of the other documents. And later, a new document, which should be the hard copy of what was sent in the click, is sent to the consumer with the warranty, with the waiver of arbitration and the class action waiver as well. I don't have anything else, Your Honors. You've covered much of it with my colleagues, so unless there's any questions.
We don't have additional questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll give you 4 minutes for rebuttal in light of how I've extended time.
Your Honor, I appreciate that. So I think the court is correct that the district court did not make explicit factual findings. What the district court did and what he's reading from is summarize. I think he used plaintiff's perspective and defendant's perspective on the argument. There are no factual findings related to whether essentially the factual question on the click wrap point, which is when you click that link, what document do you get? What happens? We think our documentary and testimonial evidence is sufficient to carry that burden, but I understand and would probably concede the court's point that at a minimum there should be vacatur and remand to consider that question on click wrap. I do think, listening to our opposing counsel, there's not a factual dispute related to the accept or return point. I think the court got the accept or return law wrong. The court's finding that the parties agree the plaintiffs did not see this document is dispositive. That's an incorrect statement of law. In their argument, there appears also to be no real dispute that plaintiffs were sent a contract after they made this down payment and signed up. Again, they purchased a contract. These arguments about the contract was different, I think when you purchase something like a, they thought it was a car warranty, there has to be a written document that reflects that warranty. And they were told that on the phone. So if that document was, as they say, different than what they thought they bought, and I'll tell you that it's not. It provides 75% coverage up to a cap limit. It's exactly what they bought. And then it includes terms and conditions, including an arbitration clause.
Well, I kind of see why Judge Carney could have been confused in that when I'm listening to both sides here, it seems that the approach seems to be if you say it more times and you say it louder each time, that it makes what you say true. So, but we have to be constrained with what we have in front of us and what the district court's order said, and we're trying to figure that out. And I'm not finding either of you are really clarifying it any more than what I have in front of me. So I
want to be helpful for that if there's specific points. I think our evidence shows that there was assent in two ways. There was assent through receiving the contract, downloading it, clicking accept, and then they also received that contract in the mail. And even their evidence.
Well, I might be able to agree with you on the click wrap, but on the assent, but then I still think on the click wrap, if I were to hypothetically agree, that there were not adequate findings of fact here. So both sides would have to present evidence to the court to make those. On the accept or return theory, I'm not sure that the district court got that wrong because, as I said previously, all the cases that you cite were pre-Norcia.
Well, I don't think Norcia...
And Norcia is the elephant in the room for you on that.
I think Norcia is distinguishable. In Norcia, they bought a subscription from Verizon, and they got a box that had, again, a 100-page warranty. This is a 4-page contract. And the court found, again, that there was no notice that there was even a contract between Samsung. It also noted that if the claim had related to the warranty with Samsung, that it might have had a different outcome. Now, here, again, in we cited Higgs, we cited Chow, which is a California case, right? Those cases are distinguishable because they actually bought a contract. They didn't buy a thing that came with some kind of terms and conditions. They bought a contract. The reasonable consumer would understand that contract would be memorialized in writing and would contain terms and conditions. And they were notified of that. That's what distinguishes Norcia and Knutson.
All right. So you've used your time. Let me make sure my colleagues don't have any additional questions. All right. We don't, apparently. Thank you both for your argument in this case. This matter will stand submitted, and this court is in recess till 9 o'clock tomorrow. Thank you.